I was sitting at my parents' kitchen yesterday thinking about today's sermon. And my 8-year-old Desi, who y'all have heard of before and will hear of more, because everything he says is true, by the way. He just is full of sermon material. That's why I had children, so he can help me write my sermons. He asked me what I was preaching on today. And I said, well, I'm going to be preaching on youth ministry. And he looked at me and he said, why would a bunch of old people, his words, not my, a bunch of old people care about youth ministry? Fair enough question. And so I answered him, because we care about one another. We care about all ages and stages of life, and we care about the impact that we have on our community and the world, and we care about the vitality and the power of Unitarian Universalism. And this concludes my sermon. Amen. Y'all can all go home now. That's it. No, I have a few more things to say. So I'd like for you to look around you and see if there is anyone near you who is over the age of 19. Anyone? So chances are, if you are over the age of 19, that you have been a teenager. And so you experienced those teenage years. And if you are under 19, which there were so many of them here this morning, Beth mentioned we had a youth conference this weekend. And so there was, I think she said 75, there were just so many kids, and they slept in here last night on air mattresses and all over the campus. And they had worship, and they had workshops, and they ate together, and just a great group of kids. And they stayed for a little bit of the worship this morning, but they came from Jacksonville, and they're really far, so they had to go home. So they were here, and I mentioned that I joined the UU Church when I was 15, as soon as I got a driver's license. I was raised Baptist and decided to start going to the UU Church as soon as I found out about it. And also here among us, we might have some adults who are parents of teenagers. So bless their hearts for doing that. I told my dad this morning when I was leaving that I was preaching on this, and he thought, oh, I have some stories to share with your congregation. I said, oh, you're not coming to church. You can just stay home. So my kid's favorite babysitter, Jacob, I know him because I taught him RE in Tampa when he was my children's age and is now their babysitter. He brought to my attention last week when we were in the car that Desi will be in youth group in just 4 years. He'll be old enough to be in youth group. And that kind of blows my mind to think that my little one is going to be in youth group one day. He's going to be old enough for that. And I got to tell you, I am going to need a liberal religious community of support when I am the mother of a teenager. And I know that he is going to need it. It's going to be critical. We are a multi-generational faith community. And today I want to spend some time kind of exploring what that means and exploring the salvific power of our religious community. I love the word salvific. It's just a fancy word, a way of saying saved. And we save people here. If I were to call on folks to testify today on how Unitarian Universalism saved your life or the life of someone you know, I bet there would be a few stories in this room. And so I'm thinking maybe I'll do that in a future service, ask people to come up and testify. We'll see how that goes over. Our liberal tradition celebrates a personal search for truth and meaning in an open and affirming, loving and joyful community, and that saves. And I cannot think of a time in someone's life that is more important for that saving than when you're a teenager. I took a class a couple of years ago over in California at Camp de Benneville Pines. It's a UU camping conference center out in there in California in the San Bernardino Mountains. I'd never been any place like that before, being from Louisiana. And it was at a senior high camp, so it was a really neat way to learn about youth ministry, to actually be immersed in what was actually going on. One of the first nights of camp, we walked up this twisty mountain road. And I couldn't see. It was so dark. You couldn't even see the trees around you. But I could smell the fresh, earthy pines all around me. And I could hear the trickle of splashing water in the streams that were hidden deep in the dark forest. And the sky above us was huge, so black and glittering with these diamond stars just everywhere. And each step up the mountain was slightly illuminated by flashlights, a few flashlights, and the moon. And you couldn't really see anyone around you. You could maybe see the person that was right in front of you. They were so close. And so conversations took place in the dark all around me, and I didn't talk much because I didn't really know anybody yet, you know, so I was just kind of listening, which was fun, to listen in the dark and not know who's saying what. And so I heard adults, you know, youth advisors that were there, and they were talking about what it's like to be the parent of a youth, these dark confessions to other parents. And I heard their struggles, and I listened as youth were giggling and flirting with each other and talking about music, and that really filled me with joy to hear their experience. And then I heard a sound, a song, a prayer coming from the front of the group. I mean, this was a lot of kids going up this mountain. And it was really soft and so far away at first. And then it got louder and louder as it moved closer and closer as this sound came closer to me. And it was, "Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on." When I was a teenager, I listened to that song and I longed for that person, that group of people to lean on and to help me carry on. I longed for someone to help me make better choices. I longed for a friend to hold my hand, to affirm my presence, to stand with me in my pain and my confusion. There are so many who long for that friend in that community. In my hometown, in my neighborhood, I know 7 boys who committed suicide. Brad died when I was in middle school. We were on our neighborhood swim team together, the town South Seahorses. I was not a very good swimmer. He was a very good swimmer. His name is still on the records board at the swim club. I pretty much swam because my parents made me, and I got an honorable mention ribbon and donuts. They give you donuts after swim meets, and I was all about the donuts after the swim meet. But Brad was really good. He was a really good swimmer, and he took his own life. His family belonged to the UU Church there in Shreveport, and it was the first church that I went to. So it was kind of neat seeing a kid from the neighborhood in the UU Church. It wasn't a very big church, as you can imagine, in Shreveport, Louisiana. So Wade, my friend Wade, died my sophomore year. Wade and I had actually dated a few times. He was a big, gentle guy who loved hunting and fishing and driving his truck in the mud, favorite pastime of Louisiana high school kids. The whole high school showed up for his funeral. Chris lived around the corner from my house, and his dad owned the local country music radio station, so that made him even cooler in my eyes. And we used to play football in his front yard and drink together at the park. Michael was the brother of one of my friends. We would go water skiing together on Lake Bistineau. So many happy memories on the lake during the summer, and I had the hugest crush on him. He was so good looking, but really only interested in older girls in bikinis. He got in some trouble, and he started doing drugs, heavy drugs, and we didn't see him much after that. Roland lived a few houses down from Michael, who is also the brother of a very good friend of mine, Allison. And Roland was sweet and loving and kind and always telling jokes. And my parents knew his parents very well. Charles lived in the house behind our house, and we would jump the fence to play with each other. Charles was my older brother's best friend. And he left behind his brother and two small children. Jason. Jason lived two streets over from me and was gay. He never told anyone that he was gay, but everybody knew it, and everybody teased him and called him a sissy. When we were young, Jason and I got into a childish fight in the cotton fields behind our house, and I hit him with a stick, and he ran home crying. And all the boys laughed at him and said that he got beat up by a girl. And he came out as a teenager a few years after that, and then he killed himself. I wonder, what if those kids had attended the Bentonville Pines? What if they had had a loving, affirming religious community? Would it have made a difference? Could it have saved their lives? Some of us, lucky, lucky souls, have been raised UU, have been part of this liberal religious tradition since birth, like our minister Roger, who is still in touch with the friends that he made in his youth group. And some of us here today are being raised UU, like my children. It makes me very proud to think that they are going to be able to say that they are lifelong UUs. That's very exciting to me. Perhaps you belong to another non-dogmatic religious tradition or had parents who didn't take you to church, but they really encouraged you to think about life's questions of existence. And many of us were raised in traditions that didn't really encourage us to find our own truth and meaning if it was different from the truth and meaning that they felt was right. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and look down upon faiths with a creed. That's not my intention. I'm very grateful for my Baptist upbringing and any religious tradition and practice that works in people's life in a positive way is okay with me. I asked the congregation to share with me some stories for my sermon about the transformative experiences of your youth. And I'm grateful for all the responses that I got. I received letters that touched on topics of elitism, letters that talked about Roe versus Wade and that time in history and how that had an impact on who they are today. I got a letter about the count of the death of Jesus and how that affected them as a young person. One thing that resonated with me as I read was the power of this religious community, a religious community, the power of what we have going on here. Remember, Mary McClendon attended a Lutheran church in Omaha, Nebraska, and had many positive experiences. She writes, "The annual church picnic was filled with wonderful food, watermelon, and best of all, homemade ice cream. Luther League for young people was a wonderful way to spend time with other teens. We played Wink'em," which was interesting because when I read this, that's a game that's played in our youth group as well. It's a fun game with all sorts of kids, and they pile on each other. And she had a lot of fun doing that. Our kids love it. "The most negative memory was catechism class. I kept asking questions about the Trinity and the virgin birth and was told that it was in the Bible. It was the Word of God and that you shouldn't question that. And it still doesn't make sense to Mary. I have a magnet on my refrigerator that says, I promise to question all of your answers." And that might not go over very well in other denominations' religious education programs, but it goes over very well in ours, because that's what we're doing, is we're teaching our children and our youth to question, to ask questions. We don't ask them to take in faith alone. Use reason to come up with your answers. Exploring religious truth, meaning, and experience is central to our Unitarian Universalist faith. And faith development is central to our liberal religious education. In communities and as individuals, we seek lives of meaning anchored by our values and a commitment to promote principles of justice, love, trust, safety, tolerance, and encouragement. We want to deepen the spirit and nurture our souls. We strive to contribute to and shape the wider world for the greater good. We recognize that we are a part of the interdependent web of all life. So we strive to contribute to and shape the wider world. Historically, young people have been on the front lines of social change. Our denomination has had many young people participate in lunch counter sit-ins and protests and marches during the civil rights movement. And since then, UU Youth have and are playing a very active role in our social justice movements, ranging from immigration rights to marriage equality. Young people can be very passionate and frustrated and angry. In his book, Acts of Faith, Eboo Patel talks about his experience as a young person who was very critical of the oppressive systems of inequality that exist in our world. He discovered the Catholic Worker House of Hospitality and began reading books and essays by the founder, Dorothy Day. In Dorothy Day, Patel found a gentle, intelligent, and radical answer to his desire to change the system. The most radical part about Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement, says Patel, was the insistence that everything the movement did be guided by a single force, love. Dorothy Day writes that we have all known the long loneliness, and we have learned that the only solution is love, and that love comes from community. Patel is very aware that his discovery of the Catholic Worker House was monumental. He knows that he could have been influenced by other adults, adults similar to Terry Robbins, a leader in the Weather Underground, a radical 60s group that had planted bombs in federal buildings as a strategy for bringing down the system. Patel tells a story of Terry's influence on a young Bill Ayers, a middle-class kid in the 60s who romanticized the violent rebellions of John Brown and Che Guevara, and like Patel, felt rage towards the oppressive American system. Terry sat at a kitchen table one night in 1968 and suggested to the gathered, angry young group that they start bombing police. At first, Bill and his friends resisted, thinking the idea crazy. But after a while, Bill found the image of principled violence intoxicating. And he went on to participate in many acts of violence, losing his friends and a decade of his life in the process. Patel wondered, what if I had been at that kitchen table that night? What if a Terry Robbins figure had crossed my path, showed me his sketchbook full of bomb designs, encouraged me to study the Blaster's Handbook? As a teenager, I was already convinced that America understood only violence. I was just this side of believing that it was my responsibility to inflict it. I only needed a nudge. A nudge. How many youth are sitting at kitchen tables right now being offered violence, being offered empty sexual encounters or drugs or alcohol to soothe their despair and fill their aching emptiness? They are being nudged by people or groups that have little care for them or who are careless with their precious lives. So they can be nudged by them, or they can be nudged by us. They can be nudged into a dangerous, alienating, broken community, or they can be nudged into a loving, affirming, life-saving community. We are here to offer a nudge towards love. As a pastor, I counsel young people who are struggling with their identity, and they're struggling to make sense of this world. They are scared. They are so scared. They are eaten up inside, and they are struggling with addiction, with low self-esteem, with the pressures of existence. Y'all remember what it's like to be a teenager and just to be struggling with perhaps physical illness or mental illness, brokenness. They just need to be seen and heard like all of us. We just need to be seen and heard. This seems to me to be one of the highest callings of our religious community. We care for each other. We lift each other up. We support one another when life feels like it is falling apart. When life is heavy with burden and despair, we help one another reconnect with that that is greater than ourselves. To see our place in this larger picture and to see how our lives are intertwined. We are spiritual guides walking together. I attended Broadmoor Baptist Church in Shreveport, Louisiana for 15 years from birth until the day I left to join the Unitarian Universalist Church. But I did not leave because I was lonely and ignored. I did not leave because I lacked community or love. I left because I was seeking salvation, and I could not find it in the Baptist Church. I was seeking salvation from my pain and my disconnection, a salvation that would save me now, not after I died. I love youth conferences, like the one that took place here this weekend, because I know that our community, Unitarian Universalism, is nudging our youth into the right direction, that we are affirming them and loving them and welcoming them into our religious community, and we are growing with them. Many folks I spoke with about this sermon today in preparation said that they attended church when they were young because that's where their friends were. One of them was actually embarrassed to say that that's the only reason that she went to church is because her boyfriend was there. I told her it makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense to me. We desperately need one another. We come here because we're friends with each other. We want to see one another. We're creating the friendship and the bonds and the support systems that keep us afloat. Here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota on Fruitville Road and in other places, as we explore the reach of our faith into the surrounding areas around Fruitville Road, we are creating connections that save lives. Could a deep connection to a loving, supportive religious community have saved the lives of my friends? I don't know. But I do know that we are saving lives now. We are saving lives today. We are changing lives that will change this world. And so may it be. Amen.